The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
All right, morning enthusiasts. Do you struggle to get out of bed in the morning? How about losing your energy by midday? Do you experience brain fog in the morning or lack of motivation? Well, you are not alone. I heard you loud and clear, and that's why I created the Hit Savers app. I have great news. It is live. So go to the Google Play Store and the Apple Store to download it for your best morning routine ever. You'll get more energy, mental clarity, productivity, and it will even position you to find your purpose. That's right. Hit Savers will prime you to get up, dress up, and show up in your life every single day. Go to www.luneedlewis.com/hitsaversapp to download it for free today. I'll see you in there. Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Luneed Lewis, and today I have the honor of introducing a very special guest to the show, Bob Wheeler. Bob helps others conquer their money shame and avoid making poor financial decisions by teaching how emotions can dictate our choices. Bob's crusade for personal growth has cross-pollinated with his accounting practice to create a new approach to personal finances. His passion to help others gain insight about how their emotions trigger financial decisions. Combining finance with behavior, Bob explores his personal concept of creating a healthy relationship with money in his recent book, The Money Nerve. Looking forward to hearing so much about this book, so much anticipation around it. So, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, I'm very happy to have you on board because this is crucial. The emotion, the relationship we have with money is deep-rooted. It is subconscious. And I'm so glad to actually have you come on to tell us about it. So go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself before we get into your book.
Okay, awesome. Well, so I'm a CPA, which means I do taxes and money stuff. It was not what I wanted to do when I went to college. I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I met a bunch of lawyers and decided I didn't want to be a lawyer.
Smart.
And I did accounting because it just helped my grades. And I started getting into it. I found I had a knack for it. So I was helping a lot of other people. And at the same time, I was making a lot of really poor financial choices, which didn't make sense because I had the credentials. And so basically, listening to my clients, doing my own self-exploration and my own financial journey, I really came to this understanding that we're all making decisions with this emotional undertone that we're not always aware of. And I was making financial decisions based on beliefs and emotions, and they were actually getting in the way of me making practical, sound financial decisions. And so as I talked with other people, I just felt more and more compelled that I wanted to start these conversations around money and help people discover their money stories and their money nerves so that we could all let go of the stigma of shame around not knowing how to handle our finances because we didn't learn it properly from our parents.
It is scary. Yeah, if it's not a dinner conversation, it doesn't get thought. We don't learn it in school. We don't learn it in the home. So we're left to figure it out. And we go off to college, and then these people, Capital One is at a kiosk, is at a table, is saying, hey, you can get a credit card and you don't have to pay any interest on it for the next year.
Right.
And then we fall trapped to that.
We do. And I think our culture is so much about instant gratification. Don't find out the details. Just give it to yourself. You deserve it. And we don't really learn about the consequence, the impact.
Yeah, those people should really be banned from coming on campus because they know them. They know damn darn well these kids don't have money.
They do, and that's why they target them.
Now, the more interesting part about money is the subconscious beliefs, the limiting beliefs that we have around money. And I struggle with it myself personally. It's like, you know, money, especially if you grew up in a Christian home, money is the root to all evil, right? It's the love of money that's the root to all evil. But we grow up poor and people find honor in that. So how do you start helping people break that cycle?
Well, it's interesting, you know, it does come up a lot where people will say, well, you know, Bob, the love of money or money, and it's not good to get into the money. And what I say to people is, I'm not saying let's all be greedy and let's all be super, super rich and not help anybody else. I'm saying, wouldn't it be great to know you can cover your rent next month and that you've put money away in case of an emergency, and that if there's a medical situation that happens with your kid or your spouse, like those are healthy things that don't make us bad people. It just makes us more informed. So I really work with people to start to look at, what are the beliefs I have? So many people will say, I want to have lots of money. What do you think of rich people? They're evil. So now I'm in a bind. Mm-hmm. I want to be rich, but I don't want to be evil.
Yeah.
And so learning to have these conversations and realizing that, yeah, they're difficult conversations, but they don't need to be arguments. They don't need to be, it's all or nothing. There's a lot of gray area. And the more we can start to get to know our stories, the more we can decide, wow, does that really serve me anymore? Or do I want to let that go?
So we got to start the reframing process. Identify that there's the limiting belief around money, and then start reprogramming the mind. Are we using affirmations? How does that process begin?
It's a combination of things. It's definitely using affirmations. You know, I'm successful. I deserve financial success. And really, because a lot of people I find don't feel like they really deserve it. Like if people knew the truth about me, they would judge me. And so we start to say, yeah, I actually do deserve to have a healthy relationship. I do deserve to have success. You know, I deserve to have gratitude. And so I think that's a component. The other thing is to really start to pay attention to the words we use. I hear so often people say, oh, I'm so broke.
Right.
I'm so broke. Well, you're driving a car, you've got a cell phone, you've got 3 TVs, you're able to eating 3 meals a day. I don't know that you're broke. You know, you may be struggling. You may have tight cash flow. So starting to really reframe, you know, I need to have the newest cell phone. I'd like to have the newest cell phone, right? To start to, oh, I'm making up stories about the words I use. So really starting to be intentional and specific with the words.
Yeah, because anything you put after the word I am, you will become.
You will become.
You will become that. That I am broke needs to be reframed to, you know, I am capable. I have money. I can make money. I can. And then somehow the universe will show you how to make money. It'll show you how to add value.
Absolutely. And for a lot of people that are stuck in the middle, they don't know how to quite bridge to the new reframe. So it might be, instead of saying, I want to have financial health, but I'm not really good at making decisions.
Right.
Okay. You reframe that as, I'm not having a great experience with money right now, and I'm learning to do it differently. Mm-hmm. So that we try to, again, it's about reframing to start to reframe that mindset so that we actually start saying, oh, that's right. It's right now, it's temporarily not working out, and I'm moving towards something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm consciously making that choice.
Yeah. And then that subconscious decision or that reframing will actually start to, you'll see it in your behavior. You'll behave differently because of it.
Absolutely. And it's so, you know, my first editor said, you know, I don't really make any of my decisions emotionally when it comes to money. It's very straightforward. And I said, okay, well, when you go to lunch with your dad, who pays? Oh, well, he does. I'm his little princess. Okay, well, who pays when you go out with your mom? Well, I pay because I feel so bad that my dad left her and I just feel so bad for her. Uh-huh. Okay. Who pays when you go out with your sister? Oh, we're even, Steven. So we pay, you know, oh my gosh, okay. And so even in that little example, she's making decisions emotionally. I feel bad for my mom. I'm my dad's little princess. And we do those things. We buy a lottery ticket and we win. And we're like, oh my gosh, I just won $5. Or, oh, I never win.
Mm.
Right? And we reaffirm.
Yeah, the book, The Subconscious Mind by Dr. Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
He talks a lot about never finishing a negative sentence around money. You know, don't say I can't afford that. This is, you know, find something else to say that because you don't want to draw it to you.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And it's so easy to get caught up in these stories. And I think what happens, I know for myself, I made a lot of decisions when I was 5 years old. Probably not good for a five-year-old to be making life decisions that I've held on to for my whole life. And we make these when we're young, and then we don't go back and reevaluate to see if they still serve us.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about value, self-value, and how it correlates to money. Because if you have a dollar bill and you tear it up, you know, it is still worth a dollar.
Right.
And if even if you like boil it up, throw it in the trash, somebody finds it, a homeless person finds it, it still is worth a dollar, right? So I find it that with self-worth, we lose that. You know, why is it that a dollar, you know, doesn't lose its value ever, regardless if you throw it in the trash or you tear it apart, but we humans, we lose our value. How can you help us understand?
Well, even when you talk about the dollar, which I love, is we all agreed that a dollar is a dollar. And we all agreed $100 bill is $100 bill. I do an exercise where we work with the dollar bills and everybody has different currency denominations and everybody in the room, I can have 30 people in the room and everybody's aware who's got the $100 bills, right? We all know the value and we want it. And even though it's not their money, it's an exercise. They still want to hold the $100 bill because they know it's worth more. And so we place the value on that dollar that keeps giving it the value. At the same time, we also turn around and say, oh, I don't deserve that. There's a whole bunch of people that are smarter than me. They're much kinder than me. And then we can find all these reasons. Or a big piece for a lot of successful people is the imposter syndrome, right? If anybody finds out, and we discount the fact that we did the work, we discount the fact that we got the education, we discount the fact that we have solid experience, and we just go back to that place of I'm not enough. And so the more we can start to say, I am enough, just as I am, I'm good enough, I'm enough. You know, yes, I want to keep striving to be the best version of myself, and I'll do the best that I can until I can do better.
Yeah. If we don't do that, it pinches our flow. It pinches. There's a pinch in us making more money. So tell us about the money nerve. I love how you coined that, right? Tell us what the book is about.
Well, the reason I ended up calling it the money nerve was because I realized that we all have these places in our body and people's health gets affected when we don't have money coming in. Our body gets euphoric when we get unexpected money. And so I really wanted to just tie into the fact that it's in our body. These emotions that we have around money are contained. Even if we suppress them, they're at work. And basically, what happened was I was sitting at the Comedy Store one day and a friend of mine who came in was a comic and she was in tears. She was very upset. And she said to me, you know, I am such a failure. I'm the only one in the world that doesn't know how to deal with the money. You know, my brothers, my sisters, they're all doctors. They're all professionals. And they just all got through telling me what an idiot I am that I went into entertainment. I'm just a comic. And I said, you know, there's a lot of people that you think are doing really well. You probably would be very sad if you had their financial circumstances because they're just presenting. They're just pretending like they have it together. And you're actually just admitting, I don't have a lot of money. And so that got me starting on the path of writing the book as I was doing my own self-exploration of money beliefs that I had and vows that I had made. And I started noticing that with all of my clients. I'd give them really sound practical advice, and then they'd go out and do the exact opposite. And I realized until I started to understand where they were coming from emotionally, I couldn't actually really help them practically because they were getting blocked by these emotional money nerves.
Yeah. Pinching your flow.
Pinching your flow. I love that. So that goes perfectly with money nerve. And so once I started to realize that people had stories and we needed to start looking back, what did parents say? What did the culture that I grew up in say? If I grew up in a Christian home or if I grew up in a Muslim home, or if I grew up in a Jewish home, what were the stories, right, that were being told about money? And starting to really get uncomfortable, but starting to actually look and say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I had this judgment and these beliefs. Yeah.
And so you're giving them tools in the book to actually work through that?
Absolutely. So the book is really almost a workbook because there's a lot of calls to action at the end of each chapter. There's a lot of journaling. There's certain exercises you're asked to do to really start to get really aware of all of the stories and the underlying, what I call the under voice, that's secretly working against us. That voice that when somebody says, "Who wants to be rich?" and everybody goes, "I do." And then the voice underneath goes, "You're not going to get it."
Right.
Right. And that's the voice we have to get to know.
And that voice is, it's been programmed. Like you said, it may not serve us, but we picked it up. We're socially constructed, right? We picked it up through in our family, at school, in the environment, wherever it may be. Somebody said we weren't enough one time, or we don't deserve it, or deserve to make money. And it somehow just sticks with us.
It does.
To adulthood.
And what's so interesting, I just was talking to a client the other day who's older, and this is so true. He's sitting there saying, you know, all these voices are telling me that I'm not enough, but actually my parents have passed. All of my aunts and uncles are gone. I've just been, it's my voice. I'm just disguising it as my parents.
Ooh, scary.
Right? Right? So we're like blaming our parents, but they've already moved on. And we're saying, oh, I don't deserve, oh no, that's me. That's me that believes that.
Oh, Bob, you just hit it on the nail. I don't know if anybody has felt that, but that voice in your head is you.
It's you.
Be careful what you say to yourself, because you are listening.
You are. And that's what I really want to get people to start to be aware of, is that we need to be kinder to ourselves, and we need to actually start telling ourselves that we actually deserve it, and that we can have it, and that we're capable, and that we're lovable, and like, and really take that in.
Yeah, it's an inside job.
It's an inside job.
It starts within, and it's just saying, know your value, know your worth, and also so you can charge what you're worth too. I found a lot of entrepreneurs are not charging enough for their services because of that. It's not just making money. It's like you're really undermining your service.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I work with a lot of psychotherapists. I do some workshops with psychotherapists about not charging enough, or feeling like then it takes away their value of being a good person if they're asking for money after a big process, and learning to actually value yourselves. Yeah.
It's pretty scary. Now, I know that's the deep-rooted subconscious work that you do. Now, you do practical work. You actually show people how to manage their money.
That's right. Absolutely. I'm a big believer in honest budgets. We do budgeting. And the reason I say honest is sometimes I work with people and I'll say, look, if you've got a spending addiction or you've got some other kind of addiction, we need to put that on the budget. I'm not going to judge it, but I need to understand where your money's going. And we go in and we just start looking at all those things. What am I really spending my money on? Some people will have a belief, well, if I spend the money when I'm not at home, it doesn't count. Like, you know, I had my office manager used to hide candy in her drawer. And I said, what is this? She said, oh, well, if I eat it at work, it doesn't add calories. I said, oh, I didn't know that rule. Right. So we work on getting really honest about budgeting. We talk about like putting money away, how you can save money. For me, one of the things I tell people to do is set up 2 or 3 online savings accounts that are not connected to any other banks. And you just transfer in $25 a week, $50 a week, and forget about it. Just make it an expense so that one day you look over there and you're like, wow, I've got $5,000. Oh, I've got $10,000. And start making it an expense instead of something you can go back to pull you out of a situation when you really didn't need to touch that money.
Make it an expense. I like the way you phrase that.
Yeah.
Just something you don't even have to go back to. So you even you teach about retirement. How far do you go in terms of financing?
Well, you know, so some people come in and they want to figure out how much money do I have to have so I can retire at a certain age. And we can actually, if I know what we can work out, okay, how much do you need for rent? How much do you want to travel? How much, what are all the monthly expenses you need in your retirement? Let's figure out that number, multiply it times. Does it, you know, and I ask this question, I say, I hate to ask this, but does everybody in your family live a long time? Do they, you know, some people are like, you know, everybody in my family dies at 72. All right, let's at least plan for 75 or 80. But okay, you know, but we try to actually look at how long do I want to be in retirement and what kind of lifestyle do I want to live? And then we can back into that number. Mm-hmm. Some people are already there and other people will look and say, oh, wow, I have some work to do. But at least with that knowledge, then they can start putting money aside. And one of the things I tell people, this is a great, I think, action item when you're getting ready to spend money. Ask yourself, is this in alignment with what I want my life to be? Is this actually serving me, or is this just instant gratification or trying to fulfill an emptiness somewhere? Is this in alignment? so that you can then start making choices saying, yeah, I don't really need to spend that today because I'm actually saving for my future.
Yeah, or you can sleep on it, see if that or you can sleep desire on is still there tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I've been sleeping on a juicer for a week now, Bob.
Have you decided yet?
No. I'm like, they're not cheap. They're $300 for the model I'm looking at. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I want to be healthy, but a Vitamix will do just fine. My fiance has one.
Yeah. No, you know, I think that's so awesome because I probably spent 3 months before I bought a TV. Everybody was like, just buy the TV. I'm like, I want to make sure.
Yep.
Got to make sure.
but tell me there's a coaching course that I need specifically to grow my business. I'll drop thousands on it. No problem.
That's right. Right? That's right. And we justify. Oh, yeah, this is the reason. Right? We set up a belief system that or a story, and then we keep doing things that reaffirm our story. Right? I can't have the juicer, but I can spend $10,000 on a course that may or may not help me.
Yeah. Don't make me feel bad about it.
No. I think even if you take one thing away from a course or you take one thing away from a seminar, that's still juice, right? That's still great. I got some information. But I do think, like when I tell people, I want you to save, I want to help you save, I want to help you be healthy in your spending, I'm not asking people to give up their whole life and live in scarcity. So I certainly believe in certain small steps of reward and reinforcing, like, yeah, I'm doing a great job. I'm not saying you should go without, you should starve yourself, you should never eat out. No, not at all. But find a healthy balance that allows you to move forward towards what you say you want and then also be able to actually still live in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, what's the strangest things that you've seen people spend money on, the most money on, as you work with them on their budgets?
Well, I've seen people spend money on certain courses and stuff that I, you know, just weird courses. I can't think of one right now. But a lot of times I'm like, you spent, you know, I had a client that had an idea for a business and he went to a lawyer and the lawyer said, yeah, I can set up your corporation, do all this stuff. It'll be $100,000.
Whoa.
And the guy was like, okay. And he only did that because he had inherited $100,000.
Wow.
And I went, oh my gosh. You just gave that away. Well, and this isn't somebody spending money. Actually, I know somebody that received a settlement from the government for $2 million on a health issue. And then they turned around and gave it to the church because they felt like they didn't want to have to deal with it. It was better for the church to have it. And I was like, well, they may not give that all back to you when you find you can't make your house payment. But they really just, they weren't comfortable with, that's above my comfort level. And so I think a lot of people, you know, people will go out and spend $20,000-$30,000 on a stove. I had a client one time that said, do you love my kitchen? We spent $200,000 renovating the kitchen.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Do you like to cook? Oh, no, I don't cook. I just thought it looked. And I'm like, you spent $200,000 on a kitchen and you don't even cook? Like, no, but it's really cool. My friends all love it.
Keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Up with the Joneses.
Gotta do it. People do it a lot of the time. It's really to buy face.
Yeah, it is. It is. Absolutely. I had a client that had been out of work, but they lived in a very nice house and they lived in a really nice neighborhood and all their friends went to this country club that cost $50,000 an annual fee and then $10,000 a month. They didn't have any money, but they went to their parents and borrowed the money so they could pay the $50,000 fee so that none of their friends would know they couldn't afford it.
Wow. There's an acronym for people like that. They're like PAWS, right? The PAWS and the children of PAWS were the high spenders. They don't really need to work very hard. They just go to mom and dad for, I think it's The Millionaire Next Door was the name of the book I'm thinking about.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check. Well, you know, it's very true. This also comes up when I'm working with people on trying to figure out what they have in assets. And some people I'll say, okay, how much money do you have? Do you have any money in savings? And then do you own your car? Do you have any real estate? And then they'll say, oh yeah, I've got $1 million coming to me in inheritance. And I'll say, okay, but do you have it now? Well, no, but I'm going to get that. Are you sure? Like, oh yeah. And so then we have a conversation about anticipating inheritance. And we usually take that off the list. But I do find there's a lot of people that sort of feel like, oh yeah, that's mine. Yeah. I'm going to get it. And it's like, you might not. They might run out of the money. I don't want to say that it's entitlement. I think it's just a belief system that they've been raised with that, yes, that's yours.
Yes, that mindset. It's nice to have a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And I'm sure you know a lot about this with the clients that you work with. Growth mindset is, you know, they're capable. You know, when you have money, you don't have to think about finding money, right? It just kind of comes. It's just a growth. That's the mindset we have to develop and grow into, because the rich doesn't think about where they're going to find money. It's really the last thing they think about is money. It's just money keeps coming.
That's right.
It's expected.
And then the universe delivers most of the time.
Yeah.
And it really is about having that confidence of saying, yeah, I'm confident it will show up. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And not coming from that scarcity or, oh, what if it, and then you're, again, pinching the mindset.
Yeah. You're pinching your flow. You're
pinching your flow. I'm writing that down. I love that. You taught me something new.
Yeah, of course. I want to know, tell us about your morning routine. How do you get up, dress up, and show up?
So I like to spend about an hour with myself every morning, whether it's meditating, listening to music. Right now, it's walking my dog. And I do that every single day. And when I'm taking that walk or when I'm meditating, I'm actually doing my mantras as I'm walking out there. You know, I'm walking along. People probably think I'm crazy. And I'm just saying, you know, I'm a lovable, desirable, sexual, attractive, creative person. I deserve success. I am lovable. I allow myself to have financial success. And I have all these little mantras that I sort of go through in my head. And I say them out loud when not too many people are looking. And then I also do that when I'll sit down. I've got a little space where I've got some candles and some incense and just symbols of things that are important to me. And I'll just sit with that and for a little bit and just, again, reaffirm my worth, reaffirm my purpose in the world, and just really get comfortable with that. I used to be uncomfortable with that. What I used to do in the beginning, and I think this is a great thing to do, is I used to do it in front of a mirror because it was incredibly uncomfortable to sit in front of a mirror and talk to myself.
Yeah.
And so I did that until I got comfortable, and it took a long time. But it's really great to be able to stand in front of a mirror and tell yourself you deserve all of this and not feel a cringe or a wanting to run away. And then the other thing that I do when I start my morning, after I do all that, I write out everything that I want to accomplish that day. And some people might say, well, you make a list of what you don't want to do, because if you wanted to do it, you do it. But I actually find that when I write it out, there's a connection between my brain and the pen and my finger of telling me these are the three things I want to do and these are the people that I want to contact. And I always have a couple of people or friends that I want to just call and tell them I'm thinking about them. So I really try to mix it in. It's not just all business, but I mix all the things that I want to get in there. And then at the end of the day, I look down and make, oh yeah, great. I took care of that. Great. I make my days very intentional.
Yeah. You feel very accomplished after that.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Great to be organized. I love your morning routine. You're actually cultivating yourself. You're priming yourself for the day. You're preparing yourself before you show up.
Absolutely.
That time is so crucial, that meditation and walking and exercising and the affirmations, they're so powerful.
They absolutely are. And, you know, some people, I've been on a couple financial shows where everybody was very money, money, money. And somebody said, what do you tell your clients during COVID? And I said, I actually tell them to breathe. And they actually were like, that's such a great answer, because I think we do have to get connected to ourselves first before we can go out and be with anybody else and be of any service. So it's important to get grounded.
Absolutely. I can't agree more with you. You're absolutely correct. Tell us, Bob, how can we connect with you? Where do we find your book?
So you can find me at themoneynerve.com, and it's got links to the book. I have a new online course called The Course to Financial Freedom that takes you through your history, and it's a 12-week course. And you can also reach me at bob@themoneynerve.com. You can send me an email or ask me a question, and I love interacting with people and helping people out. So feel free to reach out or check out the website. It's a lot of resources. There's practical stuff. There's emotional stuff. It's all in there together, because I think we have to have both.
Yes, morning enthusiasts, you've heard it here first. This has been Bob Wheeler, and he talks about how to not pinch your flow, how to cultivate a healthy relationship with money. And his book, The Money Nerve, has tons and tons of actionable items that you can do to help with the unnerves.
Yeah.
For lack of better words.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate you coming on the show today, Bob. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm just appreciative of the space, and I just hope people out there will start knowing that they're worth it and that they'll start taking actions to reaffirm that.
It's an inside job. You're worth it. If you want more money, start believing you can. You deserve it.
Absolutely.
I love that. All right, morning enthusiasts. Do you struggle to get out of bed in the morning? How about losing your energy by midday? Do you experience brain fog in the morning or lack of motivation? Well, you are not alone. I heard you loud and clear, and that's why I created the Hit Savers app. I have great news. It is live. So go to the Google Play Store and the Apple Store to download it for your best morning routine ever. You'll get more energy, mental clarity, productivity, and it will even position you to find your purpose. That's right. Hit Savers will prime you to get up, dress up, and show up in your life every single day. Go to www.luneedlewis.com/hitsaversapp to download it for free today. I'll see you in there.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.